Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 1:14 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is October 30th. Big day today in terms of data. We had US GDP came in a bit better than expected. It's still below where it was this time last year, but it's still in positive territory and well in positive territory. Then, of course, we had the Federal Reserve cutting interest rates as expected and signaling that they are at least on pause for the next meeting, and they're monitoring the situation. But then, of course, we also had the UK election campaigns starting to kick off with the last day of Parliament, and some rather, I think, probably the best way to think about it is that with the slogans that have been brought out, by, particularly by the Labour Party, we can see what the tenor of the election is likely to be. It's all about going to be about class warfare. That's I think a distillation of what we're seeing all over the world, whether it was the cancelling of the APEC meeting in Chile or what's going on in Hong Kong, or then what's how the election is being framed in the UK, or indeed how the election is going to be framed in the USA next year. I'm already starting to see Elizabeth Warren placards popping up in people's gardens around where I'm living. I've noticed that all the Joe Biden ones have seemed to have disappeared. The lone Amy Klobuchar one that was sitting around has also disappeared, and Warren posters seem to be popping up left and right. Well, if that doesn't tell us who's going to be the eventual candidate, I don't know what does. But all of these protest movements share exactly the same set of underlying problems. There is inequality. One of the things that people talk less about is the level of inequality that you have in China. Everyone talks about the quantity of savings that exist in China. Nobody talks about the distribution of those savings, for example, that they talk about the massive number. It's in the trillions of dollars that are saved in the country, but that 80% of all those savings is concentrated in the hands of 10% of the population. Just happens that 10% of the population also happens to be a member of the Communist Party. It's hardly a coincidence. Then there is 40% of the population in China has no savings at all. 40% of 1.3 billion people is a lot of people. And then, of course, we have the fact that consumer credit is rising and they're on the cusp. Well, let's just say there's a property bubble. I'll come back to China in a moment, but I think the dollar index is perhaps the most important chart that we see in here today. It reversed an earlier advance. That is, I think, investors taking with a grain of salt that the Federal Reserve thinks they're not going to cut interest rates again. The bond market is also stronger in here today, with the 10-year yield contracting somewhat. I'll put that yield chart up in a second, but the defining characteristic of the dollar index's trend over the course of more than a year has been the succession of higher reaction lows and its ability to find support in the region of the trend mean. The pace of the advance has been modest, particularly relative to the kind of volatility that we've had in the index over much of the last 5 years. The hallmark of it has been higher reaction lows. If that's broken, we're going to be moving into a much more volatile period for the dollar. Its inability to hold the rally off the decision by the Fed in here today does suggest that investors are not willing to continue to give the dollar the benefit of the doubt. We know, for example, that the Federal Reserve is engaged in a repo facility. Whether that is permanent in nature or not has yet to really to be decided, and I don't think the Fed has decided that either. But the reality is that there is an illiquidity issue within the repo market. Banks are unable to supply liquidity to the market, whether that is because they simply don't have the available cash because so much of their available cash is stuffed into bond markets because of requirements to hold Tier 1 capital. And of course, regulators have very conveniently defined Tier 1 capital as government bonds. Or is it because the US Treasury is siphoning liquidity out of the system to fund a $1 trillion deficit? That obviously is another potential reason. But regardless of what the reason is, there's a requirement for additional liquidity. The Federal Reserve has to supply that. They've already pumped in $200 billion into the balance sheet. But the problem is that with the repo facility acting as a liquidity provider to the entire financial system, then what it in fact represents is an unlimited call on the Federal Reserve. In the event of a problem arising, then it does mean that the Fed's balance sheet has got an unlimited liability. And that is a risk that I think is underappreciated by investors. And or that is perhaps why the dollar is starting to come under some pressure now. Of course, it has not yet broken its uptrend, and it could yet bounce and reverse the decline that we saw in here today. But the margin for error is quite narrow at this stage. It absolutely has to hold that 97 area. If we see the dollar breaking down, well, that will probably be really quite bullish for gold. And the gold price was in firmer territory in here today against the US dollar. Silver prices are also, silver prices are also steadying in here. There has been a clear rounding characteristic over the course of this month. We've got, but there's still the sequence of lower rally highs, but $17 does certainly appear to be offering at least near-term and potentially medium-term significance for the silver price. Then platinum, which had unwound most of its overextension relative to the trend mean, has bounced. It has got the clearest evidence of support coming back in, and the sequence of higher reaction lows being sustained. Anyone with an eye for trend lines will clearly see that there is a clear trend up from the lows back in June. And of course, palladium has been leading on the upside. It was in additional positive territory in here today, completely countermanded the weakness we had yesterday. This has been a very, very consistent move up from the lows in August, despite the fact it wasn't quite able to hold on to the $1,800 area in here today. Now, if we then think about what's going on in terms of US 10-year treasuries, it has not pushed on to a new higher high. In fact, we had the yield pulling back in here today. We do have the higher reaction low. I do think that given the magnitude of the upper dynamics we see on the weekly chart, that it is quite likely the 1.5% level is an important low, but we are definitely going to have to see the low hold during any period of strength that comes through in the coming days and weeks. There is still a very wide overextension relative to the trend mean, and what that may suggest is that we do get some additional ranging and support building for the yield coming in as that overextension gets unwound just by time eroding it. I do think that what's going on in China represents a bigger risk than what's going on in the USA. If we look at Shenzhen B shares, what I find particularly interesting is that it's at a new reaction low in here today. There has been a clear downward bias to trading since the peak back in April. I think one of the most important things about this index is that it just does not have a lot of the state-owned companies that tend to lend stability to, for example, the Shanghai A shares. It also doesn't have banks. So while the A-share index is still holding the region of the trend mean and does look like it is putting some support in, What we're seeing in the B-share market is probably more representative of the consumer. And I think that's not immediately evident in either the A-shares or in the CSI 300. So I think that when we look at what's going on in China and the continued weakness that we see in the commodity complex. Now, this is the big question when we look at commodities is, are they going to be capable of breaking this downtrend? Certainly, the weakness of the dollar could be a fundamental bullish case for some of these commodities. But certainly the 400 level absolutely needs to hold. Then the question is, what is the willingness of the Chinese administration to engage in pulling the levers, or the traditional levers of support for the economy, to support the housing market, the infrastructure development industry, and heavy industry? These are the big employers. They're also what have helped to sustain growth over the course of the last number of decades. With the Chinese consumer reliant on the wages that these sectors provide, then and leverage ratios becoming less supportive, then the big question is, what is the Chinese administration going to do to try and support growth? That's the very big question that we have out there that I think is being less considered, rather than exactly what's going on in terms of the US economy. But when we then think about the reliance on China that the transportation index represents, well, the TRAN index had earlier this week pushed up to break its sequence of lower rally highs and then pulled back rather abruptly in here today, and it was being led lower by C.H. Robinson. That was a phenomenally large downward dynamic that we saw in here this week. It certainly confirms the slowdown in freight coming through the ports and subsequently getting trucked around the country that I observed when visiting the customs warehouses earlier this month. What that definitely is suggesting is that there has been a slowdown in terms of the quantity of freight that is coming through, but the consumer continues to represent a strong factor in terms of the US economy, and unemployment remains really very low. The uptick that we're starting to see in shares like GE, where they have increasingly started to show at least some evidence that a medium-term low has been reached. Quite how long a ranging phase might last is open to question, but the pace of the downtrends have certainly abated. Then when we look at, for example, some of the more successful industrial companies, Danaher, for example, has just about unwound its overextension relative to the trend mean following that incredible move on the upside earlier this year on strong earnings. Well, that also helps to highlight that there are some industrial companies that have done just about everything right in this cycle, and others have done just about everything wrong. When we look at what's going on in terms of the pound, then this question of not just about Brexit and in what form it is eventually going to pass Parliament, but rather what is the program for government over the course of the next administration, and what that's going to mean both for a redistributive agenda or a growth agenda. Unfortunately, it seems that given the polarity of the political system, these alternatives are rather mutually exclusive, and that does represent a challenge. The strength of the pound, however, does suggest that the more market-friendly of those alternatives is the most likely potential outcome, and not least because I think the majority of people are rather scared of what a Corbyn administration might in fact try to implement. I think that's also a lesson for what can be expected from the next US election. I think there are probably a lot more people are scared of what Elizabeth Warren might introduce than they are of the known quantity for what Trump might introduce. Now, when we then think about what's going on around the rest of the world, well, the Japanese market was in mildly negative territory in here today, but it is confirming support in the region of that 20,000 level. The South African rand was weaker in a rather dynamic manner in here today, and it did give up some of that weakness following the weakness of the dollar later in the session. But it's looking increasingly likely that ESCOM is going to require a really rather significant rescue package. And the pattern of underperformance for the rand remains really clearly in place. When we then think about what's going on in terms of the Chilean peso, it was moving on to a new all-time low in here over this week. And that's not a new all-time low, but it is certainly coming back and testing the lows that we saw back in 2002 and 2003. The more important point here is that it is certainly not appreciating. The pressure that has come to bear on a number of the commodity producers because of their market commodities over the course of the last 5 years, and that has clearly, I think, etched into the minds of the electorate that nothing was done during the bull market to improve the competitiveness of their economies. They are now wondering why there is this continued trend of inequality, and people are literally out in the streets rebelling at the mistakes that were made by administrations during the commodity boom. This isn't something that's going to be... There isn't an easy solution to some of these problems, and it's going to require a clear program of improving standards of governance and diversification of the economies. And these are long-term policy initiatives that need to be implemented. And doing so right now would probably be the best time. Of course, the big question for Chile is what is going to happen in terms of that copper price. The weakness of the dollar could be heaven sent for some of these commodity dependent markets. And of course, then we have to consider what's likely to happen in terms of some of the more developed commodity markets like Australia, where the Australian dollar is now coming back up towards this 70 cent level. That's pretty much in the region of the trend mean right now. So the question is, will it be able to break this downtrend over the course of the last while? The New Zealand dollar has got a similar chart pattern, and it will really have to sustain a move above 65 cents. The Canadian dollar is also starting to steady in here. So when we start to think about what is the potential outcome, well, a weaker dollar would certainly help to support emerging markets and would support the commodity complex. That could potentially help to lend the kind of support to the global economy that could put a low in. We're seeing that Europe is also starting to do better from here, and the Europe Stocks 600 is right in the region of the upper side of a 19-year range. There is the potential that investors are going to come around to the view that we're going to see a concerted effort to devalue currencies in order to try and support the economies of the world. That should be beneficial for gold and other fixed assets like other commodities, and potentially for stocks in terms of the inflationary bias that would create. But it's not especially great news for bonds, but bond prices have been attracting this safe haven status. What, of course, the problem that we will probably see is that money can't just simply be printed into existence ad nauseum. Eventually, it is going to create an inflationary problem. That is one of the reasons why gold prices continue to strengthen. And these are, I think, really very interesting times. And I will leave you there for today.